Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. That debt is fraud. We need to continue to learn, and that's really the focus of this show. If you'd like to pray with others, don't forget Loudoun Liberty has a prayer circle. The information is on the Reclaiming the Republic's Red State Talk Radio podcast page of how to connect on that. And once you're done praying, you got to get up. You got to get up off of your knees. You got to take action. You've got to take the power, because knowledge is power, and act upon it so it actually becomes power. Anyway, with that, the whole focus is full compliance with the Constitution. There's a lot of people out there that kind of, oh boy, if we actually forced it, if we got rid of all of Congress, we'd be dead. And I'm here to tell you, no, that's not true. And as a matter of fact, we probably wouldn't get rid of all of Congress. The smart way to go would be applying a little bit of filter to make sure that the people that do go are the people that are literally going by a playbook of attacking the Constitution and driving an agenda. Typically, this is going to be your Democrats, because your Democrats are systematically attacking our system, creating a, you know, critical mass to basically break us by spending money recklessly. I mean, they're the ones that have actually created these little vestiges like USAID, where they throw your money, our money, into these little NGOs or these little backdoor offices, and they hand that out to operators who are literally running an insurgency against the Constitution. I mean, that's how they bring down governments, and they're bringing down our own government and getting you to pay for it. So we have to start forcing at the county level to start actually turning away a lot of this stuff. We can survive the next couple of years without having to really do too many new road repairs and so forth. But we have to be very deliberate, and we have to be very quick in what we're doing. We can't survive decades and decades and decades of a slow takedown. We have to do this quickly and thoroughly. The faster we get this done, the better off we're going to be. And the more simple it'll lessen our pain and make the process of cleaning things up and moving forward more simple. Anyway, welcome back, Sean.
Great to be here, brother.
Hey, I'm ready to dive into some of the real controversial stuff, because believe it or not, as much focus as we put on the First and Second Amendments, and technically that Third Amendment is right there that helps create a better paradigm regarding that Second Amendment, because we got to have a place to put the troops. If we're going to call them out of their homes and send them somewhere, we got to have a place to put them. And so that was all a part of this well-regulated militia. So anyway, excuse me, we're now on the Fourth Amendment. And this is probably one of the amendments that was very well crafted to where I don't believe it is not still fitting in today's technology. So let's go ahead and pick this up and let's read this through, because it is basically one full statement. There's no semicolons or anything else.
Amendment 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized.
That's right. So the warrant has to contain that. It has to contain where they're going to be searching for something and what they expect to find there that they're going to seize. So in other words, they have to have really good information before they can actually, you know, get into your home to basically take your stuff
or, you know, gather data on you, evidence to basically prosecute you. Now, here's the thing. In technology, we have big tech that has been gathering data. Now, so let's back up a minute. In the old days, what level of regulations in the 1830s, 1820s, right out the gate from the Constitution, what level of regulations did the states have for corporations and businesses? Any idea? For the most part, their regulation was, you know, are you being nice? You know, they may have had, you know, some states may have had some, you know, set regulations of, you know, what you're going to do, who you're going to buy from, what have you. But I don't believe that this, at that point in time, they were regulating labor, you know, out the age of the person you're employing. I don't think that they were regulating the actual environment and that type of thing. So for the most part, the only regulation they had was, based on your books, you need to pay us a certain percentage. For the most part, it was just revenue. And over time, the constitutions kind of grew in the states. Some basically, you know, got into some ability of regulating labor, some ability of regulating the manufacturing and the standards, maybe that type of thing. But folks, I would beg you to go read your state constitution, and you'll be surprised at what regulations are legitimate, period. Now, this is important because right now, the majority of all regulations that are going into corporations, where do you think they come from, Sean? Like labor?
Lobbyists?
Well, yeah, but no, but when I'm talking about where, when the regulations come into the state, what is the source of those regulations?
Legislations.
Well, so that's coming from Congress, the Department of Labor. See, what happens is the Department of Labor, you know, comes out with this DEI thing, and they say you need to have a better representation of the disparate groups that we're now protecting. And here's a listing of those people. And so these companies are being pressured by the state government and the federal government to hire people that meet these requirements. They're also coming in with federal regulations to provide detailed information, more and more detailed information on where they're getting their resources. In reporting all of they're asking for reporting information that's, for the most part, especially when you get into the size of the company and when you get into the type of the company, because if you're just building furniture and it's just you and your sons and you're not considered a big state corporation, for the most part, the real regulation they have is a little bit of labor regulation, unemployment, which is a part of that, you know, your other benefits, health benefits, because that's now been driven and mandated upon you, as well as, you know, your revenue. So it all depends on the size of the company where government all of a sudden expects you to be providing certain types of reports. And most all of these requirements have been come from on high, from the federal government. And they now have the ability, because, see, when you're really dealing with super big companies like telephone companies, when the state needs or the federal government needs records from the phone company, they say, give us these records. And they give them the records. The phone company has never balked at the state or federal government asking for any records of yours. But hold on here. The data that is in those records is about you, where you live, your phone number, you know, who you've called. In other words, it's about it. These records are basically intelligence. Does that make sense? I think you might be muted, so Just checking.
Yeah, oh, I try to mute when you're speaking.
And it's fine. So you realize that these corporations are keeping data on you. In some respects, it might be operational for managing and what have you, but for the most part, they're keeping records about what you're buying, how much you're consuming, what you're doing, blah blah blah. And the government comes along and says, we need information, we need all your data on your customers. Boom. They give just a big chunk. This is all the data. Now, in some respects, these companies have a level of data that they even sell to other companies, because other companies are very interested in your phone number. Some of these companies are very interested in your information. And so, technically, when we look at these companies and the companies and the regulations that are being put upon them, especially, you know, you've got these real private companies, right? And as soon as a private company jumps into a public company, in other words, now you can buy their stock in a market, they're even more heavily regulated on, you know, their finances and so forth. And so the juncture has happened where they've moved from a private company into a government company. In the old days, we had a free market system, and the only relationship between government and businesses, large businesses, was revenue. Now, businesses basically tell you, you know, you're manufacturing light bulbs, and the government is coming along saying, you can't manufacture those anymore. You can't manufacture that. You're building a car? You can't build it that way. You have to build it this way. What we now have between government and corporations is a mercantile system. And mercantile means that the government is in control. Whether you like it or not, we don't have a free market system. We do not have a true capitalistic system. And as much as everybody looks evil upon our system, it is an evil system, because it's not free market. It's not a true capitalistic system. So as government has created these strings, these fond attachments for that information, they can snap their fingers and they can get anything and everything. And oh, by the way, folks, they don't even have to snap their fingers. There are corporations today that are offering all of your data without any reservation. It is a monthly report, or however they pipe it in to the CIA or to the government in any fashion or form possible. They give them the entire history of all of their customers. When they've logged into, like, Amazon, what you looked at and whether you bought something or not. They report all of your activity because they keep track of all of that. Why are they giving that information to the government? Any idea, Sean?
So the government will enact legislation that benefits their corporation?
Well, so there's that maybe in the background. There's, you know, how they can take better and more control over we the people, the consumers, and so forth, and put us into a tighter control systems. Yeah, there's that. But the reason this is happening is because the government needs intelligence. The government wants to know, what are you operating in your home? They want to know what type of, you know, appliances are you running and when you run it. Did you know that these smart meters actually can report that?
Did you know that the smart refrigerators can tell the government how much ice cream you ate last month?
Possibly. That's an appliance.
Yes, sir.
But that's an appliance, and if you have that appliance, I tell people, you buy anything smart, you've got to be the stupidest person I know.
Right.
Because it's
they're smarter than you.
it's not smart, you know, for any consumer to give away their data like that. And there are people that just think that, oh yeah, I don't care. Put a chip in me. I don't care. Okay, so we have those fools. But when it comes to the ability for you yourself to be able to protect your data, when your electrical company comes along and says, hey, you have to have this smart meter. Your water meter, they have the same thing now on your water meter. And they're doing the same thing on your gas. Everything is becoming smart. Now, the interesting thing with electricity is every appliance and all these things have frequencies, so they can tell you exactly what, you know, whether that was a KitchenAid or whether that was a Cuisinart Mixmaster that you just turned on, because they have signatures to the frequencies that these things operate on. And it's scary, but the real reason and really what's happened is government has basically created a massive intelligence gathering system on their own people. Because that's what this data is. This is intelligence. They're collecting data when they have no reason for or no justification to have it. Well, we can get it, so let's get it, and then we'll have it over there. And, you know, We'll get a warrant, you know, to seize that. No. For them to get it, they need to have a warrant. The fact that these companies have brought in these smart meters has not benefited. As a matter of fact, has anybody's electricity price gone down since they've installed these meters? As a matter of fact, annually, electricity continues to rise. But they told us that putting these things out, it would save them money. Okay, yeah, saving them money, and they're still ratcheting more. And oh, by the way, if you've been watching on an annual basis, the rewards that the electrical or utility CEOs are receiving, they're just getting higher and higher. In other words, their profit margins are going up more and more. And I'm here to tell you that this is supposed to be a public system. This should be government ran. And it's not. And this is a private entity that is in bed and operating as an intelligence gatherer for our government. And every group and every corporation out there, the bigger the corporation, the better intelligence that they can gather on you. So with big tech and everybody else, they're all taking your data. The question is, why is it that no state has stepped up and said, you will not provide any customer data, customer report to us or to the federal government? If we find out you do, we will shut you down. Because the 14th Amendment protects us from these round, you know, these runner, what do you call those, bypassings or you know, going around the system. when the 14th Amendment says, no state shall make or enforce any law that abridges the privileges and immunities of a U.S. citizen. But they're not actually making the laws that are directly attacking you. They're making laws to gather data from these corporations on you. In other words, they've created regulations and they're enforcing these regulations so that they can obtain your data. And the real question is,
so they can seize your property and your effects.
Or, yes, they can, you know, they can determine when you're going to be there, what are your trends. Oh, they're always in this. And they go right there, and there's your location. And you get arrested or what have you, detained. And this, I mean, this is how they did January 6th as well. So exactly. The fact is that we have this right to be secure in our persons from all of government. In other words, government cannot obtain any of the data in your house, on your person, on in these papers, in your effects. And so what is your property? This extends to your property, your car. They can't go into your car and grab anything. The Fourth Amendment basically extends itself to protect you and your world. Now, they've created, and the courts have created, this open field doctrine where, oh, well, it's on your property, but if it's out in the open, it's fair game. No, if it's on your property, they have no business going there to obtain anything without a search warrant, period. So the Fourth Amendment is being, it's just been shred. It's been shred, and we've got this intelligence gathering system called businesses, Walmart, the rest of the bigger the business, the bigger the spy they are. And so, unfortunately, everybody has been doing deals with the devil. I mean, how many, I'm embarrassed to, you know, to even think of how many people are Amazon Prime members. I've proven to my wife that, you know, as long as you shop smartly and you don't have to, you know, have it here faster, 9 times out of 10, almost everything you get from Amazon is free. You can get it for free shipping. Almost everything. And so what's the point? What's the point in paying that premium? Oh, well, their content. It's other crap. And yeah, okay, you may have access to it, but they even want more money for this, that, or the other thing. It is a portal. And, you know, here's the funny thing. Big tech, like Amazon, makes all of this money off of these $100 and some, I think it's $160 now, you know, for a Prime membership. How much of that money goes to the state in revenue that Amazon has made in that transaction in that state? $0. $0, because it's not considered a sales, because they are only responsible for sales tax for an item. They're supposed to charge you sales tax on top of that. Well, hold on here. Amazon is conducting business in your state. If you make a transaction, any person conducts business in a state where they make a transaction between the, you know, the business and the resident, then that, and it happened, that resident does it right there on their computer in their home, that's an in-state transaction. If a resident actually goes out of state, like the travels to Oregon and say, I'm going to buy this, ship it to me here in Oregon, and then they run back over. Well, hold on here, you're a resident of this state, and you went over, yeah, I went and bought stuff. I mean, there's people that do that all the time. Go to Oregon, they do heavy shopping, and they go back to Washington, California, whatever. And I'm sure there may be other states in the union that don't have sales tax that basically benefit that way. But the fact of the matter is that transaction, if it's occurring in the state, they need to report this. Facebook, all of these tech companies are not paying taxes, by the way. So, in other words, they're able to operate with impunity, and or I should say immunity, and they're able to, you know, be protected because they're good, diligent intelligence gatherers. If you bought a Facebook ad, and that you paid for that ad, and that ad runs on computers in your state because you're targeted towards a group of people in your state, you know, everybody that's in your group or these different groups and so forth, then that should be revenue reported to the state revenue board so that they can tax that. But they don't. The states aren't enforcing, you know, the enforcement of business the conduction of business or transactions of business. They're not going after these things. And it's been proven it's in the millions. So when we come back, I'll dive into this because I worked with the legislator on this. But this is a little bit outside the 14th Amendment or the Fourth Amendment, but it goes hand in hand. We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so when I sat down with the legislator, they actually, what they did was they looked at the revenues for advertisements, and they looked at business advertisements and organic advertisements. An organic advertisement is an advertisement that is being done by a user, you know, to like run a campaign, you know, a political campaign in their county. What have you. So they run ads that are based on that. Now, they actually came out with, and I believe it was just this obscene amount of money, just regarding Facebook, as well as Google. Oh, by the way, folks, you do know that every time you click on anything in a Google search, there's been a transaction made. You click on that link and go to that website. Google just made money because you clicked that. Now, how much money is Google paying the state on every transaction of all the Google searches that everybody's clicked upon? You see my point? So, in other words, these big tech companies have been getting away with making money and bypassing these every state's, you know, regulations. The bottom line, if you're not here, as a matter of fact, what the states should do, and this was what I advise states, if you've got a big tech company that's operating and they don't have a brick and mortar business to absolutely function and operate in your state, then you need to, especially if it's a big corporation, a certain size corporation, then you basically hit them with all these extra fees and fines. To say, there's no reason why you don't put a brick and mortar here, and that way we'll give you the regular business cost on those revenues that you're, you know, the transactions total of the revenues. So you'll pay what, you know, 4% if it's at a certain rate, 6%, 8%, it just goes up the higher the revenue amount goes. So these heavily populated states that have no presence, no Amazon, no Facebook, no presence, will be able to actually start making. You know, we see this all the time of how, you know, these small states, Wyoming, the Dakotas, Montana, they're all being strapped hard, and they're all being abused by big tech. Big tech is hating on them, you know, providing information and so forth. And they're making money and not reporting it. So when we look at these intel agencies, as if the states actually started regulating them, because bottom line, the federal government has no authority to regulate any corporation. Any corporation that is operating within your state, it's operating within your state, i.e. over the internet, then you can regulate them. And the states need to start protecting us. And they need to start, as they start regulating and protecting us, that's where they need to create regulations that say, any data that you collect, personal data, that can be used as evidence in any form, must be expunged, especially if, you know, unless the user allows you to have it. In other words, your policy needs to be all data has to be expunged unless you have the end user allow you to have that information. Now, again, there's those fools out there that want that. I don't care about my information being out there. But anybody that is smart recognizes that there's no way there's no way technology is so accurate that we're so safe. There was a case, and I remember reading this, it was a couple of years ago, where a gentleman had a Fit watch on his wrist and used to do this bike route that, you know, traveled around these neighborhoods. And it's just so happened that a robbery went down in a neighborhood where that guy's bike had just basically kind of traversed that area at that exact same time. So when they had that data, they said, hey, this guy had to be the guy that did it. And they arrested him. And it took a long time for this guy to finally get out of the charges and everything else. It was just ridiculous. He was guilty by technology. So all of these types of things are huge intrusions into our rights. And people sign up for these things. And states need to protect the people from these types of things. And as a matter of fact, go ahead. Yeah.
What responsibility falls on the individual person when they make a contract with the company? Because if you sign or you sign up, you, like you said, if you sign up for the service, they give you the terms of service.
Yeah.
And if they violate the terms of service, then, you know, you have a claim against them under contract law. But if they tell you in the terms of service that they're giving your data to people and selling it to people and you sign up anyway, then doesn't that pretty much, you're signing away your rights?
So when you join an HOA and the HOA, you know, as you've been living there for a while, and they come along and say, we're going to become a gunless HOA. You can't have guns in your house. You signed and agreed with whatever they wanted to come along with and create a rule or law or what have you. In the United States, at no point can a person's rights be relinquished via a contract, even if you've signed it. This is why the Ninth Amendment says, any enumeration within the Constitution, in other words, you create a power and you enumerate this power in the Constitution to be able to do something. The Ninth Amendment basically says, because this is usually what happens at state level or federal level, but predominantly state, the state will create a law that will actually violate your rights. And like they're creating laws now that violate parental rights. And it says no law, no enumeration in any constitution can be so construed to disparage or deny the people of their rights. So when you it's one thing to make a law, and it's another thing to make a law that is within the enumerated powers, right? Because now that's a power that we've actually given government that they can legitimately create that law. I mean, they make laws left and right, and that's called the color of law. You know, they've assumed powers. They actually don't have legitimate powers to do it, but they've assumed those powers because the federal government told them to, and now they're making laws, and they're enforcing those laws. That's called the color of law. When they actually have the enumerated power, and they create a law, and the law that they've created is a direct violation of your rights, like parental rights or what have you, then that law is null and void because we have these levels of protection in the Constitution that make sure that we never can lose, or even if we sign off on an HOA, they cannot construe the fact that they have the authority to take away your rights. The only time a person in the Constitution can be denied their rights is when they have committed a crime and are considered an indentured servant until they've finished serving their time. That's when you lose your rights. When you go to jail, you lose your rights, and that means, but that's because you've committed a crime, a felony, what have you. And usually, in the old days, you'd be stripped of your citizen rights if you've committed a felony, and you'd never, ever be able to vote again. And it should be that way. I think we need to maintain that. I think that we marginalize the importance of being a good citizen. I mean, I think it's important that people repent and get back on the track and so forth. But I honestly think that, we have these three strike laws that keep people in jail. I would say change the three strike law to saying we're deporting you. Unless it's murder or something like that, then we want to make sure that you'll be incarcerated until your execution and or for the rest of your life because you've committed that heinous of a crime. That we're going to spend money to ensure you suffer. The fact that we give citizens, or I should say not citizens, criminals, all sorts of privileges and so forth. Oh, we got these humane rules and so forth. The framers weren't that way. And, there's one thing called cruel and unusual punishment, but denying somebody cable television or denying them access to, to having a library, those types of things, that's not cruel and unusual. Being denied access to your things that you would have in normal life is what would be expected for serving time. And giving those things to criminals is almost marginalizing the fact that they committed a crime. Anyway, I digress. The whole point that I really wanted to dive into, yes, you have to have a warrant for any time your data it goes from one hand to another hand, whether it goes, from the police to the prosecutor, whether it goes from a company into a bureaucrat or what have you. It doesn't matter. That is your data, and we have the right of having our data secure. So when you're walking in town and they have a CCTV, facial recognition technology, and they actually have your biometrics where you are registered in their system, then that right there is unconstitutional. Now, some people say if you go and register your system because you want to be a part of that, that's one thing. But I say that crosses that line where it doesn't matter. You may have signed the contract to let them have that, but they can't write a contract that denies you these very specific rights.
Right. So they can't turn over your information to the authorities.
Not only they can't turn it over, they can't put your data into their computer base. So the only people that they should be collecting on are the people that have been criminals because you committed a crime. Now, see, if you get arrested, you get booked, and you get exonerated because you were found not guilty, then all of your data should and must be expunged because at that point you're not a known criminal. You've been basically found innocent. So all of that data has to go away. DNA, anything that they were able to gather legitimately on you goes away. Right. Your biometrics, all that stuff has to be expunged. The only people that they should be able to maintain a database on are those people who are actually convicted. Now, if your conviction was completely overturned, where you're completely exonerated, then all that data, again, needs to be expunged. Because they're basically, and they have been playing this left and right, and you probably see these in criminal shows, criminal action, thriller, TV shows, movies, and so forth, where they're literally violating your rights by going into Ancestry.com or what have you, looking up your DNA and are going into the labs themselves and matching your DNA against their databases, who will give you their name, That's actually come up before. And they say, well, the person willingly gave their DNA to this company. Yeah, but so they're just creating this direct link that, well, because we regulate that company, we can go right in and access it. And it shouldn't be that way. If they have a database on your DNA to connect you to other people and you want them to have that, then that's one thing. But that needs to be contained, that law enforcement can never have access to it. And again, if they're going to obtain access, what are the parameters? It's got to be very specific, right? It says that it has to be under oath, and they have to particularly describe the place or the search or the person or the thing to be seized. You know, if they're just looking to find out if your data, if this DNA is in there, and they go, oh, yeah, well, this basically identifies who committed this crime, they can't use that.
It's like the geofencing they do.
Yes.
Where they just take an area and say, well, we're going to pull everybody's phone records that was in this area. Right.
Yes,
there. They're
absolutely
violating your rights because they're not describing the particular place to be searched or persons.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's the same thing by putting cameras into the malls, market squares, and everything else. And they say, oh, well, as long as it's being held by the local security, but who has direct access? Law enforcement. Law enforcement has direct access. And so if they have access and they can get your data from the fact that you were there on that particular day, and, oh, we have all this information and you were there. And we've got you dead to rights. They didn't use a probable cause to collect that data. They just scooped it up, and they're using it because it's available, because the local system is basically monitoring everybody. And as far as I'm concerned, we have to amend the Constitution to throw away our rights to go into a police state, because the Constitution protects us from a police state. And there's more harm that comes out of a police state to the innocent than any harm comes to the guilty.
Right. I think that's the line right there. And it made me think, well, you know, because in some areas of my location, there's some serious crime problems. And that's what the law enforcement are like, oh, we're helping to get the crime. You know, it helps to be able to identify the criminals. But if it's violating the rights of the people, and like you said, creating a police state, then it's crumbling the republic, you know, for the sake of punishing criminals.
Okay, yeah, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So the Fourth Amendment is such an awesome amendment in protecting us, and the courts and governments, enforcement, law enforcement, and so forth, have really wanted us to basically bypass this so that their job can be easier. Now, I get it that when you're a victim of a crime, you know, boy, you really want justice for this one crime. And unfortunately, you may be the one out of 100,000 people that have suffered from the crime itself. You know, and 100,000 people is not a big city. There may be, you know, 5-7 instances like that. And so when you look at 100,000, you know, out of, you know, 7 people, the percentiles is very, very low. We created a system that was designed to ensure that no guilty person could ever go to jail, which is why the benefit of the doubt, those types of things were implemented into our legal process. They basically, the motto was, it's far better for an innocent man to go to jail than it is, or actually it's far better for a free man or a guilty man to go free than it is for an innocent man to go to jail. That's what it is. That's the motto. So they would much rather basically have this person who's been booked on a crime but never convicted or never tried than, okay, so, you know, what do we do with that? Is that something that, you know, it's not that they've been exonerated. It's just that the crime they've not been able to prosecute because they just don't have the full indictment. The other thing is, and it comes up in the next amendment. The next amendment is even better. So let's dive into the Fifth Amendment. Go ahead.
All righty. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment of indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia when in actual service in time of war or public danger.
Okay, so the semicolon stops. That's that clause of the Fifth Amendment. So bottom line, before that person even goes into the legal proceedings, before he's arrested, he should have an indictment. They should have an indictment to go arrest the person, to charge him and try him. Now, in some cases, you know, they catch the guy that's there, you know, because they arrest the guy with the blood on his hands because he was brutally beating some woman or child or what have you in the public square. And all the, oh, yeah, he's the guy. But they still have, they cannot just go and bypass this grand jury indictment. If they're going to try him for an infamous crime, infamous meaning capital and or you're going to go to jail for a long time. So they have this threshold of what that means. And usually a rapist, a murderer, people that do real heinous crimes or violent crimes, those types of things, or even, you know, really bad felonies, you know, like embezzlement, you know, stealing things. So when these people actually have, you know, this evidence, or I should say law enforcement has evidence and they've got this guy arrested, they, before they can truly book him, that they can't, but before they can truly book him in the process of a legal proceeding, they need to get the indictment by a grand jury. Now, the district attorneys or the prosecuting attorneys typically just, you know, they start moving forward because they know the grand jury, usually because they're dealing with them on a regular basis, and they know this is a slam dunk. So they start moving forward. But at any point in time, you have been tried for an infamous crime and you were not indicted by a grand jury, then your rights have been violated. And that's one of those technicalities that would get you out of jail. So long dead silence. So when we look, and actually, I know you live in a state that's different because these rights aren't applied to you. But I'm here to tell you.
They're not.
No, they're not. Because you live in a state of civil law. Now, look at the 14th Amendment. No state shall make or enforce any law that abridges the privileges or immunities of a U.S. citizen. Technically, civil law denies a citizen of Louisiana privileges and immunities of a U.S. citizen. Do you see what I'm saying?
Hear what you're saying, but I don't quite understand how can they have a law that is in violation of the Constitution?
So prior to the 14th Amendment, Louisiana operated for seven decades almost, with civil law. They created, you know, magistrates, and the magistrates usually sat over all crimes. And all, you know, all, they did not have, because civil law, they don't use trial by jury. They may have a jury trial, and a jury trial is a trial that is controlled, and the jury is controlled by the judge, where the judge basically instructs the jury what they have to do, and if the judge is not happy with what the jury's outcome, their verdict, then he can basically suspend them and basically inject what he believes should be the verdict. That right there is a magistrate trial where it is a jury trial. Magistrate jury trial. The jury is just the dressing to make it seem like you have a trial by jury. But a trial by jury, whatever the jury says, is final. Guilty, innocent, whatever, it's final. You cannot touch and overturn that. And, you know, you have to deal with an appeal, but you can't bring any. When you start looking at these other amendments, you'll realize that, you know, it's very hard to overturn a jury verdict, especially in trying to pursue, you know, innocence if they found you guilty. It's very hard. I mean, you actually have to bring in DNA and those types of things to exonerate you. So,
well, they must have changed that because I just looked it up. Article 1, Section 15 of Louisiana Constitution states no person shall be held to answer for a capital crime or a crime punishable by life imprisonment except on indictment by a grand jury.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that is where they apply it. But a grand jury for an infamous crime is not just that. It could be a long-term crime. If a person is going to be charged with rape, where you're going to go in for 10 years, 5 years, whatever, these types of crimes, an infamous crime isn't necessarily a capital crime. When you look at how the grand jury is applied in other states, in Louisiana, they do apply one of the grand jury rule on the extreme cases and the judge trial jury, not the jury by trial by jury, and then there's a jury trial. So it's a judge jury trial, and a trial by jury is where the jury has full autonomy, and that's in common law states. And so technically, the way the 14th Amendment applied to the states to basically protect the citizens of those states, Louisiana should have basically abandoned civil law and adopted common law for the state of Louisiana. Because when we go through all of these rights, when we go through these, keep in mind how this would play out in Louisiana. Because right now in common law states, many of these things are being denied in common law states. It's not even on the table in Louisiana. And at least in common law states, you can challenge it and you can say, hey, where's my trial by jury? I have a right to a trial by jury. And we'll get into that. So let's go into this next one, which is the...
accepting cases.
No. So, nor shall any person...
Yeah. Nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb.
There you go. Okay, so we're going to stop there because I just noticed we've ran out of time. So in our next show, we'll pick up from nor be deprived of life, liberty without due process. We'll pick up the due process line. Thank you so much for participating and contributing. I really appreciate it. And folks, as we can see, the Fourth Amendment is so key in getting government to start respecting the rights of the people. They have no right to know what we're doing or where we're doing it until they actually feel with probable cause that they need to know what we're doing. Anyway, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.